Audio courtesy the Kevin Stefanski Coaches Show. Good morning, Tone.
Hey.
How you doing?
Doing what? I'm good.
It's game day.
Yeah. It is, even though I regretted to inform Ken. You guys were talking about the games last night. I go, there were games last night?
Well, I don't think anybody cares about other preseason games, do they?
Well, one of your rivals and your week one opponent started their starting quarterback and their 99 Madden receiver.
They did. I wouldn't have cared if the Guardians were playing last night. Like, you're going to watch the Guardians. I'm going to watch. Sorry. I mean, I got the NFL Plus thing, so I can go back and watch this later if I want to.
I don't know. Judging by the ratings these preseason games get, there are clearly a lot of baseball fans that watch this instead.
Oh, without a doubt. There's also gamblers, and there's also people just want to see some football, for crying out loud. So, I mean, it's not like it. Again, if they didn't draw ratings, they wouldn't do them. But they draw ratings. People watch them no matter what they want to say. The Pro Bowl still drew a rating.
I mean, I'm looking at the lower bowl. Is this game being played in Seattle?
In Seattle.
It is jammed. I mean, it looks like a regular season game. I can only see the lower bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. They get them in there. We have a game tonight. And I did some soul searching yesterday. I really did do some soul searching, Tone. You wouldn't believe this. I was standing there in the newsroom over at 8, and I was looking out the window. And at that newsroom, you can see, guys, I'm dead serious about this. Boy, you're having an existential crisis over Browns quarterbacks. Maybe you need to take a step back there and go take a walk or something like that. But either way, I did some soul searching yesterday because I'm looking at the lake and I'm just kind of thinking, and then it kind of hit me. And I think I've made a terrible mistake. And I need you to help me through this. Because I will not discuss Shedeur Sanders as if he's a fifth-round pick. I think he's better than that. I think that we've convoluted it a little bit with the Dylan Gabriel pick. But, I mean, if you were to go dollars to donuts with every Browns fan out there and go, hey, who do you think really has the higher ceiling? In all honesty. I would say the majority are going to say Shedeur.
Would the majority in the Browns front office say that?
I'm not sure, but I asked Browns fans.
Probably wouldn't, right?
But
because
this
he
is
ended
my,
up going fifth and one went third.
And this is my problem. This is my crisis. I really, really, really want something that probably isn't very realistic whatsoever. I want to skip steps on the way back to being like I've tasted competitive football twice over the last 5 years. And you become when you get a taste, all you want to do is chase that dragon and get it back. And I think I wanted to skip steps on the way back there. Like him becoming our franchise quarterback, the chances of that are actually, I got to admit, they're low. They are low chances. But because of the situation we're in, I can't help but entertain him. Like, Anthony, like, Albert Breer, there was a video of you and I arguing about Shedeur Sanders yesterday, and Albert Breer, who comes on the station every Tuesday, or basically, you know, whenever he suits it, but Albert Breer, SI, had said, boy, they aren't talking about Riley Leonard getting a shot in the Colts open QB competition this way. Why? Are they charting Jalen Milroe's first team reps in Seattle? I go, well, these situations are not like this situation. Anthony Richardson, they want him to be their starter. I don't know. He's regressing to the point where I don't even know if he knows about football anymore. Like the game and has seen the game, according to yesterday and what I saw yesterday, the clips this morning. When it comes to Jalen Milroe, I mean, you got Sam Darnold there. You brought him in for a reason. Sam Darnold's going to be your starter. Here, you got a 40-year-old quarterback who nobody, and I think Albert would have to say, does anybody expect him to start past the month of October? And I'm being generous. Does anybody expect Joe Flacco to start past the month of October?
I don't think so.
Okay. So,
of course, now I don't even know if he's starting week one anymore after some of the stuff that came out from Carolina.
Well, I would certainly start in week one, obviously. But either way, I mean, we still got a few more weeks to discuss that. Hell, it's a month until the season starts. But when you go back to this, it's like, okay, nobody expects him to start even past the month of October, and that's being generous here. So then it becomes a golden opportunity. Well, Kenny Pickett, there's already stink on him, no matter what anybody wants to say. Dylan Gabriel, it's a questionable pick. We'll see. Again, I think you're right. The people in Berea would have a lot more faith. Technically, they're in Charlotte right now. But the people in the building would have a lot more faith in Dylan Gabriel than what the general public has. And then you have this guy where I can't just treat him like Clayton Thorson. I mean, I yelled at you about it a couple days ago to the point where now I'm raspy over it, where Mel Kiper wasn't getting emotional on TV and basically to the point of tears over Clayton Thorson. He wasn't doing that. Like, this is, we cannot stick our head in the sand and act like this is a normal fifth round pick situation. However, I also can't force a situation that might not be there, because I'm not there every single day. I'm not with him every single day. We may find out tonight, depending on some of the things that he does. Maybe he is behind. Maybe he does need more time with this. Now, I'm sure people just blame Kevin Stefanski, and I flirt with the notion myself. Why? Because I'm so desperate to dig ourselves out of this hole of what we have. I see Myles Garrett, I see Denzel Ward, and I go, we have these players that if you had a quarterback, what would we be saying about this team? We have these players that one is a guaranteed first ballot Hall of Famer, and I'm just going to waste another year with him. And so I desperately, and when people get desperate, what do? They don't think clearly. And so I'm not thinking totally clearly. And so I desperately want to skip steps to try to dig us out of the hole that we've created. And that may come at the cost of whether or not Shedeur Sanders is very much ready. Does that, any of that make sense to you?
It does. But it's funny because I got a DM yesterday from somebody that works in the NFL that listens to the show.
And they said, Kenny lose his mind?
They cannot believe we are talking about Shedeur Sanders the way we're talking about him. They think people around the league are laughing at this situation. They can't believe that there is any charting of passes for a fifth round pick when he's the guy they actually have the least amount of assets towards in the quarterback room. Flacco, they're paying this year. He's getting $4 million, but with incentives could be way more. They traded a player and a fifth-round pick for Kenny Pickett. They obviously took Dylan Gabriel ahead of Shedeur, and Shedeur is there. And then, like I said yesterday, everything they are leaking to the public is to try to tell you, he's fourth on the depth chart, and their placement of him and him not getting reps. Like I said yesterday on social media, I think it's time that we just for your own sanity, whether or not you think he's going to be great, whether or not you think he's going to be out of the league in 2 years, whatever it is your feeling is, just go into any Shedeur conversation with, he's a fifth round pick. If you look at him through that lens, you're not going to be disappointed. In fact, you only are going to feel great if he ends up playing well.
I'm going to end up being disappointed no matter what.
So lower your expectations, I guess, would be the message I would have.
But
even though I'm excited for him, I am pumped. It's really the only reason I'm dialed in tonight. I mean, I would not have watched all that much, I'll be honest.
But
first preseason game.
And that's part of what we're
fighting
here.
The guys that aren't playing.
You know, Anthony, I had written down as a conversation piece before we knew Shedeur was going to start in this game, does Anthony owe it to you guys to watch the preseason? Because you're famous for, hey, I'm going to the feast. Hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm not. Like, it almost became a badge of honor. Like, I'm not watching these games live. You would watch something else, and I'll get to it when I get to it, because, guys, I'm not going to sit down and break down. Kenny will break down Jackson Barton and whether or not he can make the 53-man roster. I'm not going to sit there and do like you, and that's fine. Like, it is a show. That's part of it. Okay. But that's part of what makes you fun. But then Shedeur comes in and I go, well, then we can't treat him like a fifth round pick. Cause if it were Mike White starting for the Browns, we'd go, well, what the hell? And I think a lot of people would be making probably old mayor jokes and alpaca jokes if he were starting for the Browns in a preseason game. Number one,
We went over some of the quarterbacks that had thrown a ton of passes, and one of them I didn't remember.
I have a follow-up to that. Yeah, that's right. Well, we had one where we didn't know how to pronounce his name. You thought it was a misspelling.
Kyle Laletta.
And he played in three games and just threw and threw and threw.
I thought
and
you were looking at Kevin's Minnesota time.
And quite honestly, I did. Honestly, I did as well. I thought some of those quarterbacks were Minnesota.
You were right.
Yeah. Were some of them Minnesota quarterbacks?
No,
They were Browns quarterbacks.
Anthony was right. Those were Browns quarterbacks. I don't remember those games.
I don't remember them either. So
I don't think everybody is as dialed in as they say they
are. No, they're not. But going back to your NFL friend and going to like what Albert writes, right? I got no problem with Albert Breer, guys. Let's leave that. Obviously, he's a friend of the station.
Uh-oh. If you had to say that at the start of the sentence, where's this going?
Well, no, because it sounds like I'm attacking him. Because, I say, well, you can't stick your...
That's a Ken Carmen classic.
You can't stick your head in the sand. You have to see that the guy is a major celebrity. And you have, in unprecedented times, you've had an unprecedented fall from the first... For a quarterback, anyway. From the first round to the fifth round. Where if you get a guy that a lot of people did project... Respected people projected him to be a first-round pick. You get that guy in the fifth round, people are going to get excited about that. But also, like, the Colts situation, Seattle situation. Those teams aren't trying to dig themselves out of a hole that you created by giving up three first-round picks and $235 million guaranteed to a quarterback that people do not want to play for you this year. He's already injured. He's coming back from injury. And the vast majority of Browns fans don't want to see that guy on the field. So we're looking for something to dig us out of the hole. So now I'm basically Chevy Chase in Vegas Vacation, where now I'm digging around the holes out in the desert with Cousin Eddie looking for money so I can go put money down on terrible table games to try to get this thing figured out, to try to make my money back, to dig myself out of this hole, because I don't want to waste any more time with great football players. Damn it, you people know that Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett are great football players. You need more than two football players to be able to do this. Then you got Joel Bitonio, you got Wyatt Teller, and DeJuan Jones is coming around, but he's young. I mean, see, I'm starting to get upset and worked up myself here because I just don't want to waste any time with guys that I know, and we all know, are fantastic. I don't want to waste any more time. And I know in the back of my mind, you're just going to have to waste that time. Usually, and why we remember a Johnny Unitas, why you remember a Tom Brady, is because they're the exception to the rule. They become legends. Late round cut guy or sixth round pick, they become legends. They're exceptions. We don't remember the also-rans that have been taken year in and year out in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, whatever, undrafted, whatever. You don't remember that. And more than likely, I'm just going to have to deal with this, and we're going to have to deal with this, and we cannot skip steps, and we're going to have to trudge forward. And then, honestly, you throw on that Arch Manning conversation yesterday right at the end of the show where his grandfather comes on and is like, yeah, he's going back in 2026, and people immediately start tweeting us. Where do they start tweeting us? It's because of Jimmy. It's because of the Browns. They don't want to be a part of this mess. Nope, Eli wasn't going to be a part of the mess in San Diego. He's not going to allow his grandson to be a part of this mess here in Cleveland. No way, no how. And it just makes me even more desperate for Shador Sanders to do well because I think he has a higher ceiling than Nylan Gabriel and a lot of other fans do as well. Not guys in the office, but fans. So what I say to like Albert and what I say to your friend from the NFL is like, you guys aren't desperate. You guys aren't desperate. I'm desperate. So I'm acting in a way that if you and I were doing this show in Chicago and we were looking at videos of guys breaking down Shador Sanders, go, Judas Priest, this is nuts. That's my explanation. It's not a clear level of thinking.
But either way, I mean, regardless of the fact that he's buried on the depth chart, despite the fact that next week's going to be Kenny Pickett's week to shine, you know, in their joint practice situation with Philadelphia, regardless of any of the stuff that's going on, like, how much fun is it tonight when probably in reality, if we were looking at this situation, if it were any other team in the NFL, we would be probably going, who cares? It's a four-straight quarterback. Not here. Like, here, there is general excitement, and you got a bunch of national talking heads who know every time they bring up Shador Sanders, the internet's going to go crazy. So that's why, you know what? There's a little bit of pressure tonight. And I love it. There should never be pressure with a four-string quarterback in a preseason game. But somehow, here we are. And it makes tonight that much bigger when in 99% of situations, this night would be meaningless.
It would.
So it gave us real meaning.
Because think about this. Be honest. Like, you'd be curious. Like, well, Dylan, let's go under if they just drafted Dylan Gabriel and Dylan has a hamstring injury. Who starts tonight? Is it Joe? Or do they just get Snoop Huntley? What is the excitement in that? What is the excitement in any of that?
Non-entity.
I mean, you want to talk about the fart of all farts to kick off a
maybe
season.
Maybe the rookies on defense?
No offense to Snoop, man, but under the same circumstances, Cannon. We just signed you. You just got off a plane. This thing is dead.
I'd rather have Kyle Loletta.
This is dead on arrival here, man. You'd rather have Kyle Loletta. I mean, it's just dead on arrival. So, yeah, there is some excitement to see because we're so I am so damn desperate to dig out of this hole. This terrible, terrible hole.
There was a time when Michael Lombardi was a regular on our show.
He was.
Remember?
Yes. Oh, I remember.
Yeah, Michael was with us once a week during the NFL season.
Every Tuesday, he would torch the Browns. That's what the segment should have been called.
Torching the Browns?
Yes.
Well, Michael's had a really interesting career. He was with the Browns in the 80s and worked his way up from scout to personnel director to director of player personnel, and then was with the Eagles and the Raiders and Broncos, came back to the Browns as GM and vice president, then to the Patriots, and now he's the general manager at the University of North Carolina. And you're right, Andy, that sounds weird.
It is weird, isn't it?
There's some guys, some big-time guys, though, who have these jobs in college now. Michael has one at North Carolina. Andrew Luck is the general manager at Stanford, his alma mater. That's big deal.
Just announced Dame Lillard is now the GM at Weber State.
Mm. Is he?
Yeah.
How about that? Well, he's got time on his hands this year as he heals up.
Sadly, yes.
Yes, that's unfortunate.
A lot of fun things to do in Ogden.
Yes. Well, Michael was on the morning show today, talking with the morning guys. And obviously, you know, his main focus these days is North Carolina football. But it's not his entire focus, Daniel.
Yeah, he had a couple of thoughts about the training camp battle that was taking place in Cleveland. And the guys in the morning did a really nice job making sure, you know, hey, let's make sure you get your thoughts out there about how all of this is going. And let me tell you, as Michael Lombardi is known to do, he did not hold back when it came to the quarterback competition.
Football's a mathematical problem, and no one understands this. There's only so many reps every day at practice, and how you divide those reps is most critical in terms of how you're building your team. Because if you're giving 20 reps a day to a guy who's not going to ever play for you, you're wasting 20 reps. And once you determine what value you have in the player, who do you need to develop? Who don't you need to develop? It's impossible to develop two young quarterbacks at the same time. It's not college. We don't have 400 players on the field like they used to in college, where you could take everybody and move them to a side field and then go over. So to me, it's a very challenge. When you draft a guy in the third and then you come back and pick a guy in the fifth, it becomes very difficult. Look, Al Davis picked a quarterback in the first round from Tennessee State, and in the second round he picked Kenny Stabler. I wrote about it in Football Done Right. Now, how did he do that? That was a different time and period in the NFL, but I think it's really challenging today based on the rules and based on how much time you can be on the practice field. After you're up there, 2:45, that horn blows, and if you're not off the field, the Players Association is going to call you up.
That's absolutely factual information.
Football Done Right, by the way, is his new book that's out, or his book that's out.
Cool.
Yeah.
I hope he signs a copy and sends it to us.
Oh, well, you should beg him. Send him an email.
Beg him? I'll beg him.
Here, you want to text him?
Michael's right. And the one thing about that people might not get, it's a different time in the NFL, and things are so regimented by the Players Association that you can only do so much. You can only practice so many days in pads. You can only practice for so long, blah, 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 as opposed to days gone by when you could just, you know, work the bejeebers out of these guys.
Right.
You can't do that anymore. And that makes it a really interesting situation as the Browns try and get reps for these guys. And you know, as we've heard too many times, people screaming that Shador is not getting the same type of reps as everybody else, and Dylan Gabriel might not be getting the same reps as Kenny Pickett was and everything else. Well, Michael just laid it out. if you don't think that guy's going to be playing for you, you're wasting those reps.
Yeah.
And that's what I think people need to grasp. And that's why I would assume the two veterans, when they're both healthy, Flacco and Pickett, are getting the most of the reps.
How about the fact that he said that you can't get two rookies ready at the same time?
I would agree with that.
I don't disagree with that at all. I that's why this whole thing's a conundrum. I don't want to step on the next couple cuts because I did hear some of this other stuff. But, you know, he did talk about... Listen. I'm sorry. But he also talked a little bit about, you know, what a draft class actually is and the way you should perceive it. I don't know if we have that or not, but if he doesn't, I'll tell you what he said.
Well, why not? Let's go there now.
All right.
What people don't understand about the NFL draft is it's always for your next year's team. It's never for the current team. Certainly, you'll get some production out of a draft pick during the current year, but really what you're building on is for the 26 team. He's not the 25 team. Could he go in and play? Perhaps. Would he be effective? Probably not fair to the kid. So I think ultimately every draft class is for the next year's team. You should be evaluating the 24 draft class for the Browns this year. How's that going to line up in terms of impacting their team and getting them over the top? That's really the fundamental question. As for the Shedeur Sanders media circus, I mean, look, that's created by the worldwide leader. No one loves to talk about one thing more than they do. And so that really is not the kid's fault that they do it all the time.
The only problem I had with what he said there was, I think the standard that he talks about making draft picks for the next season makes sense if your team is a winner. The problem for the Browns is when you're coming off a 3-win season, you need to pick for now. Think about it. You could have up to probably 5 rookies starting at any point during this season. Fannin could start at tight end if you need him to. Dylan Sampson's got the opportunity to start at running back. Quinshon Judkins is running him. What happens, but Mason Graham and Carson Schwessinger. So, I mean, all of those guys could start, and you could have all those guys starting at one point during the season in the same game. So it's like, I understand what Michael's saying, but I also think that applies to teams that win.
I can't disagree with that. One thought that I have about what Michael said there and Sanders and Gabriel. If you're giving Dylan Gabriel up until his hamstring thing more reps, I've kind of always thought since this all started that Sanders is a long-term investment by the Browns and that maybe they're just trying to get Dylan Gabriel up to speed as a third-round pick and see if he can actually be the backup quarterback. Do you know what I mean? Can he be the backup this year to Flacco or Pickett, whoever's the starter? And if they think he can be, then maybe you move on from one of the veterans. If you don't think he can be the backup quarterback, you got to keep both veterans, and maybe you get rid of Dylan Gabriel. And you keep Sanders as the third guy that you hope to develop and see where he goes. It almost, the way it's been handled, Andy, almost makes me feel when it comes to security and, you know, being a part of this organization longer term.
Mm-hmm.
Almost makes me feel that Sanders could be in that position more than Gabriel, despite the fact that he was drafted 2 rounds later, because they're not rushing him and they're giving him every chance to slow play his development. And Mary Kay just hammered on that too when we just talked to her.
It's about putting him in the right position to win. I agree with that.
To
especially for Sanders. I wonder, so let's just say everybody says Gabriel looks horrible right now. Let's go on that premise that people are saying that, well, maybe he doesn't look good because there's a transition period going on, and they may be, if you're right, Jeff, and they're trying to gear him up to be the backup quarterback, then, you know, they're throwing a semester's worth of work at him in 2-3 days.
He's being asked to do a lot more than Shedeur Sanders is in practice until his hamstring.
And
that could lend itself to not being as successful.
Sure.
Right now.
I still see it, and I've always kind of seen this. It's one of the veterans and both of the rookies on the roster. That's what I've seen. One of the veterans, both of the rookies, if that's the way they're going to play it. It's risky. I think it's a little risky.
I do, too.
But you might be able to pull in a free agent at any point, too. So.
Except if Dylan Gabriel shows that he's competent and could be your backup quarterback. Then it's not as risky.
And maybe that was the case,
maybe that's what they're trying to find out.
If that was the case, based on what we've heard over the last couple of weeks, do you think that holds true today?
Let me find out how severe his hamstring is.
I don't think it has anything to do with the hamstring. It's if they had to start the season tomorrow and they had to either pick Pickett or Flacco.
One of those guys and the other's the backup.
Yeah. One of the veterans is the backup.
Yeah.
Not one of the rookies. So then one of the rookies.
Right now you're keeping both vets.
And now you're probably trying to slide one of the other rookies onto the practice squad if you can.
Well, Michael Lombardi also hammered home another point that I think a lot of us have forgotten over this journey. Rookies are bad. Usually rookie quarterbacks, about the same way.
It would be hard to put the kid in a position where he could be successful. Look, the quarterback position, and you're the head coach of the team, you got to be able to stand in front of the team and say, this player gives us the best chance to win the game. And I think that's really hard to do on rookie quarterbacks. You know, now, sometimes you're forced to do it. Pittsburgh was forced to do it when Tommy Maddox got hurt, and all of a sudden Ben Roethlisberger had to go play. So that's a different element. But I think it's really challenging for some rookie to come in and say, look at Caleb Williams. I mean, last year he was talked about as the greatest savior to the franchise. How many games did he win for the Bears? How many mistakes did he make that hurt his team? Look, Jaden Daniels did a tremendous job for their team, but that's a few and far between. I think it would be unfair to any young quarterback to put him into the fire, especially if you're not going to build your team around, look, we're going to win with defense, we're going to win with kicking game, we're going to run the ball, and we're going to limit the quarterback. That's hard to do in the NFL.
I like listening to Michael speak.
I do too.
He you know, say what you want about Michael. I know a lot of folks in Cleveland aren't crazy about him because they weren't happy with the way things went in any of his tenures here. But he knows his stuff, and I think those are some really on the money comments.
What do you think it was like when they walked in that locker room and told them Todd Philcox is going to start?
Well, that was not the best of moves. Vinny Testaverde was hurt at the time.
Right.
It would have been Vinny, but you cut Bernie, and then all of a sudden there's Todd Philcox playing in Seattle.
And maybe that's something he learned along the way.
Maybe.
I mean, you're just talking about walking in front of that locker room telling them that you've got somebody that maybe the front office doesn't totally trust to start. It's funny because as I listened to him say that, I was like, huh. Remember when you were here the first time and you guys decided Bernie had nothing left and that Todd Philcox was a better choice on the road? They knew they left themselves in the position.
Vinny was the guy.
But that could happen
Vinny was hurt.
Yeah, but they left themselves in that position when they decided they were going to let Bernie go. I can't believe I'm having an article or an argument about this. It's too late.
You're not.
No, I know we're not arguing. Just the fact that stuff burns in my mind about Bernie's exit still bothers me.
But I think, and not to be the guy who runs around dumping cold water on top of everything, the thing that I take away from Michael Lombardi, and especially in that cut, is the reminder that rookies are not good.
Yeah.
And especially in the early part of seasons, rookies are not good.
So how does that make you feel when I say you could have up to 5 on the field to start a game this year?
It makes you look at the over-under for this team and realize which direction is going to go. This is a developing team.
One thing, though, if I can throw this out. The one position where I think you eliminate the rookie status is running back. Running backs, as rookies, tend to perform really well because you get the ball, you see the hole, you go.
Jeff, your middle linebacker is essentially a captain. He hasn't played one NFL game, and they put the green dot on his helmet. Yeah, I mean, that's
sorry, Andy, to cut you
sorry.
Off.
Go ahead. That's right.
I'd love to see the numbers of rookie running backs from weeks like 1 to 4. And just because of the adjustment period that comes with going from college football, where I mean, you're legitimately running, you know, as Moses parted the seas in the middle of the offensive line.
Oh, you mean the LeBron offense?
Pretty much. I mean, that's what you're running through. I mean, we watched it for years, you know, Wisconsin running backs forever. Those lines were, I mean, we could hit the hole at a Wisconsin line. And in the NFL, it's
although
a
Ron Dane was pretty good. Let's not sell
it. I'm not trashing anybody. You know, Jonathan Taylor has been unbelievable since he's hit the NFL with the Colts.
Yeah.
But like, some of those holes were gargantuan. In the NFL, that's a crease. So I wonder if like weeks 1 through 4 on a rookie running back, what that looks like. Again, just one of those side quests that we could go on at some point.
Paul Hoynes covers the Guardians for the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Hoynes is joining us in about 25 minutes right here on Baskin and Phelps. Up next, the NCAA has made a decision. I won't say insert your own joke here, but you'll like what it is coming up next.
Emery basically makes a point here that you don't have to choose between winning and finding out what you have in the young quarterbacks.
Why not do both? You could win games and also find out who your quarterback is, hence starting Shedeur Sanders. We know where Flacco is. Flacco is your floor, your safety net. I would start Shedeur Sanders. I could say start one of the rookies, but obviously I believe Shedeur is better. But you can also win. I think we do a bad job in the media, and I'm including myself into this, and letting these coaches and GMs off the hook. They are NFL franchises. They're supposed to be the best of the best. No team should be under 7 wins. You know, it doesn't take long to turn the team around. We've seen this countless time and time again. The Browns have good football players, and it's up to the coaching staff to play the right players, play the best players, and go win games. Like, you could win games while developing a guy for your future and find out what you have.
So I do think in the end, teams end up having to make this choice more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if there is a beauty in the simplicity of the Browns' plan, it is that no matter if your quarterback is Joe, Dylan, Kenny, or Shedeur, the idea is the same, which is you're going to have a play action heavy, right? You're going to try and build everything off the run, and then off the run, you mirror the pass game. And listen, you're probably not going to do a lot of movement, which is a problem. I don't know why they can't do that successfully. But my point is, like, the whole point of this offense, in this Stefanski offense, is each guy fits the system a little differently. But how you're going to try and win with Kenny is how you're going to try and win with Dylan or Shedeur.
Yeah, but I think so what's interesting to me about this is that the ceiling for each is very, very different. And if you have Joe Flacco, then they are telling you they're prioritizing wins over the future quarterback. Yeah. Like that. That's you can't spell it out.
And they still might
anymore.
Not get him.
Might not get him. That's the other beautiful part about it all. But they are telling you in many ways what exactly they are prioritizing in this discussion.
So I think specific to what you're saying there, I think this is where there is the danger zone. On one hand, if I think you're a 3-5 win team, regardless of who your quarterback is, if you win 3-5 games, it's going to be tougher for me in December to say, I guess we're going to fire you now. At the same point, if you were trying to win games and you end up winning 3-5 games, that's wildly different than if you erred on the side of youth and you won 3-5 games. And I think that's this is where messaging matters and the truth matters. I'm not saying what they're saying publicly is the truth, but if you start Joe week 1, you are presenting the idea that we expect to compete on some level this year.
Yeah, here's the other side of this as well. Like, if you start Joe week 1 and what you signal that way, but versus the rookie quarterbacks, there's probably a part of the Browns that don't want to see both rookie quarterbacks actually play, because the moment that you see them play, you can then have the reality that they both stink. Like, that exists out there. And if they both stink, then guess what? Next year you're drafting a new quarterback, but then also you would then have to figure out the backup quarterback situation as well. Whereas there'd be many teams that would prefer the mystery box that is Dylan Gabriel if he never touches the field, or Shedeur if he never touches the field, and what that could be.
Oh, see, this is where I think it's incumbent on the coach that you tell these guys, hey, we're going to give you these chances this year, and if it doesn't work out, you're still under contract beyond that.
No. Like, but if it's more the idea that they go out there and they look like DTR, who just looked unplayable. Well, it looked to the point where there's no recourse. After DTR played those 3 games that last season, there was zero justifying ever bringing him back or ever even keeping him.
Like, we call that the Nathan Peterman, by the way.
Yeah, where it just looks so bad and it looks so awful, and the cat's out of the bag. You can't rely on that guy at all.
So this is actually an extension of the Joe Burrow. Why do you care about week 1 if your aspirations are, you know, compete for a Super Bowl? I understand that a fan wants to hear the Browns are doing everything they can to get up for week 1. And I understand that the first 6 games are incredibly important to that locker room, because if you start out 0-6, you know whether they're not all of a sudden pulling nose up on that thing at 0-6 or 1-5.
Yeah.
All those things being said, what's more important, week 1 or giving a young quarterback as many games as possible to see? And by the way, it's not just can they be a franchise quarterback. It's can they grow into something? Like, if Dylan Gabriel starts in the ground floor, can you get him to the 4th floor by the time, you know, half the season goes on? Or if Shedeur were to start week 1, can you get him to the 4th, 5th, 6th floor, even if it's not the penthouse? Can you just see development? Because if a quarterback is developing, I know we think about the NFL and like the static terms here, but if Joe Flacco is the same week 1 and he's the same week 8, The development's going to have to happen around Joe Flacco.
Which is, by the way, very, very likely that yes. Joe will be the same person he is week one than
and
he is week eight.
I'd be surprised if he suddenly was like, and now I run, unlike Forrest Gump.
And week 18.
But whereas starting a young quarterback, they might be a C-minus week one. And if you get him to a B-plus by week 11, you can have an ascending team late in the season.
Well, but if you get that quarterback, whatever rookie that is, if you get that guy to a B-plus by week 11, then that guy's going to finish out the entire season anyway.
Yeah, but I come back to the idea of, like, listen, Emery's kind of making a firm rule here of, well, you don't have to choose between winning and finding out what you have, but you might have to. So I disagree with that, by the way, because there are teams that have to make that decision. I just disagree the Browns have to make that decision. I think you have to think about, all right, who's best for week one? But if we start one of the young guys week one, what does that grow into? And how, like, because this is another absolute thing that I hate in the NFL. He's not ready. Ready is a sliding scale of possibilities. If he is close enough to being playable, how quickly can you get him to playable by actually playing? And how quickly can you take him from playable to being somebody who has mastered your offense or to somebody who is maybe helping you win?
Well, and also, I just don't think every quarterback needs to be Jordan Love or Aaron Rodgers where they get 3 years and are 100% guaranteed beyond ready to be able to be thrown in. Like, sometimes you do just have to say, let's get these guys out here.
You mean like a 6-year starter in college and a 4-year starter in college?
Exactly. People that have played a bunch of football, like the guys the Browns drafted.
So every time I hear one of these, and I thought Ken, like when I pushed back earlier this week of like, guys, they're giving Dylan Gabriel every chance here. So whether it's week one or whether it's week four, they're giving him things that signal this could be a reality, whether you and I think he looks good or not. So much of that was, so much of the pushback that I think Ken had or that listeners had was, wow, week one, you're either going to ruin him or you're going to ruin the team's chance to win week one. And it's like, this cannot be all about week one.
Well, also, if you would have done it in week one, then if you threw him out there by week seven, you're probably going to have a very similar outcome.
Well, and by the way, specifically what you just said, which I think this is really important. There will be a natural process of adjusting to the NFL. And that process is going to look very similar whether you start week one or whether you start week seven. And I know nobody wants to hear this because all anybody wants to hear right now is we're going to go out there and people are going to say we're going to win 5.5 games and we're going to win 10 games and this is the Joe Show 2.0. But this time we're going to beat Houston in the playoffs. I get that.
The Joe Show.
There's a lot of things. 2.0. Wow,
it sounds like it's like a nighttime show in Arkansas.
It's actually the show name on Walmart because I just now realized what I did.
The show name on Walmart?
Yes, because Walmart has like a, and it's like the Joe Show. It's a great idea. They really should run with that one.
Yeah, they already have.
I definitely don't roll my eyes when I'm walking around the store. Definitely not me. Not me or not anybody else.
Wait, does Walmart have specifically branded radio shows going on?
I believe it's AI, but yes. Yeah, there's like some thing going, and they play songs, and it's the Joe Show.
What?
It's awful.
I've never heard this.
No, sorry. It's great. They do a great job. I'd love to be.
I'm kind of surprised more people don't do stuff like that, I guess.
I'd love to be the Nick Show.
And it's like every Walmart just has the Joe Show playing all the time?
It's something like that, yes. I promise you, I'm not making this up. Other people can text it or tweet in.
I like that you've been in Walmart long enough to know that they have their own brand.
You've seen
my
eye twitch. Yeah. You've seen that happen. That's what happens. But it's because it's a great show. I twitch because it's just a great idea.
Does Target have like something that they call their own too? The Bo Show?
Here's the thing. Here's how my mind works. Is I immediately went through all the curse words that rhyme with Joe. And I was like, what names rhyme with Joe? And so when you said Bo, I was like, oh. Uh-huh. That was right there.
That was the one.
Yeah. Now, getting back to it. There is the natural, like, I understand that we want to win. I'm not saying you shouldn't want to win. But this prioritizing week one as if it's more important than week six or seven or eight. Or the arc of the season is short-sighted. And listen, Joe's our whoopee. We feel comfortable with Joe. I feel comfortable with Joe. But if you told me right now Dylan or Shador was 85% ready and that within the first 3 weeks, by playing them, they could get 100% ready to just compete in the NFL,
yeah,
I would take that because those first 3 weeks, it might be bumpy. But each week you're going to be building on something.
When it gives you a chance is the point. It gives you a chance of actually finding your future quarterback. The problem with Joe Flacco, and has always been the problem with the Joe Flacco conversation, is that is DOA when it comes to having somebody that you can take into the following season and actually grow something with.
216-474-0092. What is this season more about for the Browns, winning or finding out what you have in the young quarterbacks? Mike in Stowe, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
2.0.
So, listen, I thought you guys were saying, I don't mind if they start a rookie. I really don't. I don't think it's going to make a big enough difference in the season, whether they start veterans or they start rookies in the end of the season, the win-loss total. I don't think it. Maybe 1-2 wins at the most. I just think we're headed for a rough season in a tough division with a tough schedule. And we have a lot of things that we have to figure out, like offensive line. I've gone into this several times. It's our third offensive line coach in 3 years, and we went from one of the best ever in Bill Callahan. We have not got better since. And the guy we got now, we'll have to see. So I think to say that they would start, if they started Joe, they're trying to win more than if they started a rookie. I don't agree with that, because I would say that if the only reason they hold out a rookie, and I know this whole not ready yet thing, I know it's kind of a cliche, but we have a lot of things in offense that we're still going to be working on, you know, and our running game is going to be all new. We got a couple new receivers coming in, tight ends, you know, a lot going on. It might just do a rookie good to watch a veteran operate for a few weeks and get it going, even if we are losing, to see how that is. It doesn't need to be 3 years like Jordan Love, Jonathan, but, you know, there might be a comfort zone where seeing a guy doing it, they get a little bit better with it. It might be a little haphazard, a lot of, you know, false starts. I just don't want to see a guy, you know, get caught up in all of that. I do think could be detrimental to somebody's development, and I don't want to see that happen. But I'm all for seeing a whole lot of, you know, rookies this year. I don't know that it needs to be week one, though, if it's just not, you know, all things aren't right. I just think, you know, we've got a lot to learn this year. We don't need to be hasty.
Mike, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you very much. Here's my rebuttal. To have Joe have the kind of success that he had in 2023, you need a strong running game. Mm-hmm. You need the offensive line to be healthy and locked into the new system. And you need a strong running game with an emphasis on play action pass and disguising a lot of the things you're trying to do in the passing game. By the way, how do you set up a rookie quarterback to succeed? You have a healthy veteran offensive line with a distinct blocking scheme and a good blocking scheme that marries the run and the pass. And you factor in, I'm at least talking about under Kevin Stefanski in any of his, you factor in a power run game that is the star of the show. The quarterback, even if Joe plays, his arm's going to be the star occasionally. Joe is not the star of the show. And I continue to rhyme Joe.
Tell that to Joe, by the way.
Well, tell that to Bo, by the way. But Joe's not going to be the star of the show. Neither is Dylan, neither is Shador, neither is Kenny Pickett. The run game and that offensive line is built to be the star here. And if the O-line can't get it done, that's going to affect Joe just the same way
affect the hard part about that is that for the first 6 weeks of the season, it might even be more, we don't know, because we get no updates on Quinshon Judkins literally ever. We don't know how long he's going to be out. So you're going to have a Jerome Ford, which I like Jerome Ford, but it's going to be a Jerome Ford and a Dylan Sampson combo that you're going to have to start to rely on.
That actually is the beauty of the way they've set this up. And we've seen this all the time. I know it's not the direct Shanahan wide zone. Every one of these have different wrinkles. But the point is, when you feature the O-line really is the star of this team. They're going to get these guys moving. They're going to get them in power situations where they're moving the opposing defensive line and opening up holes for the running back. So a good running back can eat in a system like this, and a good running back or good running backs by tandem, then plugging into a great offensive line, that takes so much pressure off a rookie quarterback. And listen, Joe, I'm fairly certain Joe is going to start week one. I'm cool with that because I like Joe Flacco. But this idea of well, you owe it to X, Y. No. You owe it to the Browns over 18 weeks to figure out who in the hell can play and who in the hell can't. And there's no more greater position of importance in that conversation than the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, well, are they ready week one? It's how far away from being ready are they? And can you grow something? Because with Joe, the growth is going to be the O-line gets stronger, the run game gets stronger, the defense gets better because young guys play more.
Yeah.
With a young quarterback, there's growth beyond just, well, they're locking in synergy and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, it's just, you are telling me in many ways, though, if you take Joe Flacco and put him out there in week one, that you are prioritizing wins over the idea of finding out what these quarterbacks
are.
Your
ass better win in those 6 weeks.
That's what you're doing.
And I think that's, and that better be the case with the Browns. Like, if I'm Jimmy Haslam, and I'm not yet, I'm not any of the Haslams, not Cletus, not Jebediah, not Billy Sue, any of them.
Who do you got to marry to get into that? Vanessa's going to be pissed.
I think she'd be okay.
She's going to be pissed.
If it came with like 10 zeros, I think she'd be okay.
Okay, all right, good. At least you know
she
that.
She would understand. She'd be like, well, that's, you owe me alimony.
She would understand the reverse side of that, too. Like, if she ended up with a Haslam, but it was worth $100 million, you'd be like, okay.
Do I get a kickback?
Okay. I imagine.
I mean, it's not worth it. My heart would be broken. I'd be a shell of a man for the rest of my life, but yes. I'd be a rich shell of a man.
Well, she would technically be the rich one. It's just whatever scrap she'd be willing to give you.
As long as I'm rich, I can recover.
Scraps. It's not,
if I'm poor and cuckolded, man, there's just no coming back for that for me, right?
And there's just,
I already have
just
low
no
self-esteem.
Way.
We don't really need to kick it into high gear, okay? But a little bit of money. Yeah. 216.
You're not going to out-freak this freak, okay?
That's good. 216-474-0092. Thomas and Shaker, stick there. Is this season more about winning or finding out what you have in the quarterbacks? More on that in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. There were a lot of things. There was Joe Flacco saying, I know I can still do this. Mm-hmm. I didn't read anything past when Mike wrote that after the Browns took Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round, that multiple teams called the Browns with trade offers for Dylan Gabriel, and the Browns rejected them out of hand as the Browns preferred to move forward with both rookies. I'm not saying Mike made this up. I am saying I feel like somebody within the organization made this up because it doesn't sound real to me.
I'm just trying to think of what the trades would have looked like, right? Would it have been like a sixth round pick? Is the suggestion that they would have traded, would they just took a third round pick on Dylan Gabriel to then trade him off for like a fifth or a sixth rounder for next year? Is that the suggestion? Because that's just a bananas way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Who would do that?
Also, teams don't traditionally call other teams after drafting a player and be like, what do you want for him?
No, because they could have had that player. Yes. We just did the draft. You could have done that. If you really loved him, you could have done that. I just wonder
in fantasy football, by the way, all the time when guys get snaked right in front of you.
It just feels like, I don't know. The suggestion is that because they got Shedeur on a discounted deal, there's no way that they could have moved forward with Dylan Gabriel. So the Browns were going to own themselves immediately and just be like, we lost and we made a dumb decision 24 hours ago.
My spin on it when I read it was the Browns really want to push back on the idea that the only people that had a third round grade on Dylan Gabriel were the Cleveland Browns. By then saying, well, he had trade value without like tying it to somebody offered him a second round for him or somebody offered their future third round.
I mean, there's a 0% chance someone offered a better than where Dylan Gabriel was selected pick Dylan Gabriel after the draft.
Would agree. But I do think like as soon as I read it, I was like, well, if you're the Browns, you're probably sick of hearing nobody else around football liked him. And so I don't think it was also coincidence within that same piece that an AFC executive was like, he's got a great arm. He does this really well. He reads the field really well. He's just really short. Mm-hmm. the piece that Mike wrote for The Athletic it's really good. It gives you good insight on the Browns quarterback situation. But when I read that, I just thought to myself, like, okay. So this goes back to the idea of, like, this is the most obvious ploy that you could possibly have of – no, we weren't the only guy. To me, it actually spoke of a little Dylan panic of like, you're trying to defend the selection 3 weeks after, or sorry, 3 months after you took the kid, and he's stinking it up in practice. And now you're like, no, a lot of people wanted Dylan Gabriel.
Well, and so that's why I wonder if in like a week or so or a week and a half, the one leak that we have for people being interested might be two. There might be a Kenny Pickett. Oh, teams are calling about Pickett, and then there might be one for Dylan Gabriel as well, because they just want to make it seem like they're better than they are.
Yeah, and that's so the Pickett stuff, it's gotten so blatant with Schefter and Rappaport Because again, Adam was there was a video tweeted out where Adam's like, the Browns really are going to be carrying four quarterbacks on the open roster. Mm-hmm. Not unlike they're going to carry it across this and the practice squad. No. He asserts that the Browns are determined. It is more likely than not the Browns are going to carry four quarterbacks on the 53-man roster, which is asinine considering most teams don't even carry three quarterbacks on the active roster.
It's what they'd want you to think right now. It's interesting, though. Like, so I saw in a couple spots people talking about Matthew Stafford and the injury that's going on there, and he's supposed to be ready for week one, but they were making the suggestion that Shador balls out this Friday, and then all of a sudden teams will call, and by teams, they mean the Rams call for Shador Sanders services, because Jimmy Garoppolo is their backup, and Jimmy Garoppolo at this point, he's not... The only place he's scoring is with porn stars, okay? He's not scoring on the field. That man is...
And he is doing that, just so we're clear.
Toast, okay? She couldn't score in a morgue right now, that guy, nonetheless on the football field. The point is...
Not personal there.
Is that, he's so good-looking that we... It's a crime against everyone.
You're fed
up
with him?
They keep giving him these jobs based off of what I believe is just that. There's no way Sean McVay thinks he can actually play football at this point. And so the suggestion there is, well, okay... Shador will ball out on Friday, and then the Rams will call up, and then they'll try to make a trade for Shador, and then Shador can have a landing spot, will have more opportunities, and he won't be jockeying against so many quarterbacks, and then he'll be in a Ram system that's very friendly to quarterbacks, and on the list goes, right? But really, the conversation should be centered around what does Dylan offer, and then what does Kenny Pickett offer? And that would be how the Browns keep their own momentum going. Because the Shador Sanders thing, there's no feather in the cap of the Browns attached to that.
I just think what all of the quarterback innuendo and little micro reports we have out there, and the Dylan certainly is the chief among them, is that at this point, people around football are eating up whatever drama they inherit with this quarterback position. And all that's happened is that like Dylan and Shador have gotten hurt. Dylan and Kenny Pickett have gotten hurt. And Joe's got a bunch of first team reps. Like there's really like nothing's really happened with this quarterback position because Dylan's gotten some opportunities, hasn't looked good. And then he got hurt. Like every little bit of intrigue here has turned into some sort of an injury or malady or some sort of a roadblock that has kind of taken some of the sexy out of the four-way quarterback. So like, I don't know, the Browns trying to re-inject some more and try to get people lathered up for going into week one so somebody gives up a six-round pick for Kenny Pickett?
I mean, hasn't that kind of been the thinking the entire time? Is they're just trying to get some value out of these guys? Because they care so much about getting a fifth-round or a sixth-round value, and they put so much energy in that in ways that other teams just don't really even bother.
216-474-0092. We were talking about Diana Rossini saying there's a lack of juice with the Browns. Eric in Maryland, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The minute that Diana Rossini said, I haven't been to the practice or to the camp, she lost all credibility. Like, I don't know how you can talk about whether or not there's a juice or not, because that's something you have to feel. You have to be present for. And she hasn't been there. So, like, it's just unfortunate that what passes for journalism now is just somebody making something up.
So the only thing I would say is Diana still does talk to everyone. So just because Diana hasn't been in Berea doesn't mean she hasn't talked to several people she knows within Berea.
I know, but
so the idea that it would be made up is the only thing I would kind of push back on, even though I see your point.
I get what you're saying too, because that's part that threw me as well, was the idea that's like you referenced last year's camp. Last year's camp is very different than this year's camp.
And she like slid it in. Like that she hadn't been there. You know, she's like, I've been to Broncos camp and everybody's all on board. And, you know, well, I haven't been to the Browns camp, but the people I've talked to, and it's just like, all right, well, now you're just making stuff up and I don't believe a thing you say.
Eric, I believe you. Thank you very much there. I mean, I do think it's a different vibe this year. And what you make of that vibe is
I thought it was a better vibe, much better vibe.
I don't know. It's tough. Like, I didn't get the sense. Listen, I think these guys are excited. I think they're going in the right direction. I don't get the sense that these guys are as excited as last year, though, where they had real expectations for it.
I got the sense that they were actually playing for things in these practices. And last year, it just kind of felt like people were just kind of going through the motions, and it was very laissez-faire. And I don't know. Watching the practices this year, it was very different to me.
I don't see a huge...
It felt like a real professional training camp this year.
It's funny. Last year, I don't know.
It didn't for me in many ways. It really didn't. I said Camp Cupcakes a million times, but like it really did just kind of feel like it felt like Club Med. And I've said it, I said it so many times, I'm tired of me even saying it, but like it's just different.
I think it just kind of felt like a run-of-the-mill training camp. It didn't feel like anything extraordinary or different in a good way. Like, again, neither good nor bad, but it's just kind of existed. And again, it was fun because I think people, like the media, we don't have to dance around the Deshaun stuff. I think that is a weight that we appreciate being off, and the Browns do too. Well, I don't know, the parlor trick of this, spirits up, I don't know.
The parlor trick, if I don't want to get wrapped into the idea that I might be falling for something that isn't there, is that, and this is obvious to anybody that has been there, is that there's just so many more bodies and there's so many fields that are actually being used and work that's being done. So it's going to naturally feel different and busier because you just have so many more things at play. Whereas in years past, they didn't use four fields and had four different things going on at once, where now they do.
Daryl will comment on the lack of juice that Diana Rossini sang the Browns have there out at camp in 5 minutes right here on 92.3 The Fan.
Tyler Huntley, come on back. Before anybody gets all excited and says, all right, what a mess. They had to do it. I'm Jeff Phelps. My partner's Andy Baskin.
What a mess, Jeff.
No, Andy, they had to do it.
It's a mess. It's preseason. I'm sure that if it was regular season, these guys would play through it. It's just they need to make sure they have it. Yeah, they have another. They're going to have. Don't you think so?
I don't know.
The one that's probably the easiest to play.
Hamstrings are a tough thing to play through.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Sanders is probably the one that would have the best luck to play through his pain.
He's going
to
play. He'll play on Friday. This screams several things to me. They bring in Tyler Huntley.
Right.
So you have Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders, and now Tyler Huntley, and Deshaun Watson, who, of course, is injured and not playing anytime soon. Mm-hmm. We'll just leave it at that. Who knows anything more? Flacco, yesterday, Kevin Stefanski said he's good to go if we need him on Friday.
Which makes us think they don't want to play him.
The minute that he said that, we all thought, yeah, they don't want to play him, right?
They don't want to, but now, if Pickett, Gabriel, and Sanders can't go, and I think Sanders is going to be able to
go. No, Sanders is going to play.
As long as he doesn't, it's not reoccurring.
He was back full strength yesterday at practice.
Right, but he's still a little, I mean, you got to imagine, it doesn't just completely go away. He's playing through it. Remember, he said something like, all I could do is hear my dad in my head going, I got to get back out there.
I would, if they put him out there and said he was full go, then I would think he's good to go, Andy.
Okay, so what does that leave you then?
It leaves you a tight hamstring on Dylan Gabriel.
That's
not pulled, it's not strained, it's not what we heard was some, you know, hamstring soreness.
Mm-hmm.
I would think Dylan Gabriel might have a chance to play. Might. Shedeur Sanders, good to go. Kenny Pickett, back on the field, but not going like crazy. So will he be held out this week? I don't know. My gut would tell me yes.
Oh, you have five quarterbacks, so.
Exactly. And then Tyler Huntley can come in and try and put enough on tape on Friday night if he gets on the field. Mary Kay actually already reported that he will play on Friday.
Shedeur will.
No, or Tyler Huntley
yeah.
will play on Friday. So if you're Tyler Huntley, man, that phone rang and you're all over it, because what does that do for you? You didn't have a job. Now you're going to have preseason tape, and anybody who needs a quarterback, as if they weren't going to call already, will now have something to look at. So I would just gut feeling, Andy, you would think Flacco doesn't play. I would think Pickett doesn't play, but you never know. If he gets on the practice field tomorrow against Carolina, that's a whole different story. And then Gabriel, who knows? Sanders, yes. Huntley, yes. You could have Shedeur Sanders start the game, play a half, and then Tyler Huntley come in and play the other half, something like that.
Just correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not trying to make a big deal out of this, but, I mean, Tyler Huntley has plenty of NFL time. Why would it's just giving him the opportunity to play. Is that what you're saying? When you're saying that gives him tape, you're just saying he's got the opportunity to go out there and play.
This year, out of sight, out of mind, Andy, unless you're Joe Flacco.
But if I was trying to figure out if I was having second thoughts about bringing Tyler Huntley in, I'm watching his stuff from the Dolphins from last year. I'm not watching a preseason game from the Browns.
I'd look at everything I could, especially the most recent.
Yeah. I'm kind of, this is my prediction, Flacco for one series, Sanders, and then Huntley, second half.
My hope is that Gabriel is okay and he can actually practice this week, and we'll see about Pickett. The problem is going to be, and now, Andy, I think this is real clear. When one of these guys, let's just say, okay, guys don't play this week, Pickett, maybe Gabriel, you know, even in the practice. If they're all good to go next week, somebody's going to get cut. You would assume it's Tyler Huntley.
Yeah, it's easy.
You would assume. But I wouldn't say there's a guarantee of that, would you?
Yeah, I would say that if they've got to cut one guy, Tyler Huntley's going to be the guy that gets cut. He wasn't on the roster yesterday, and it's easy to make him not on the roster tomorrow. So, yes, Tyler Huntley is an easy cut.
I think that is an easy cut.
Okay.
But what if he goes out and plays extremely well on Friday?
He's an easy cut because he's going up against third and fourth stringers. Tyler Huntley is not, unless two of these guys are hurt, Tyler Huntley's not on the team. I wouldn't be banking on Tyler.
I would assume that's correct. Again, and we know what happens when you assume. Mike is in University Heights. Mike, what do you think of this?
Heights High. Hey, this is the thing. Heights High. After the weekend when your boy like lights up Dylan Gabriel, says he's basically unplayable, right?
Oh, you talking about Daryl Ryder said that?
Right.
Yeah, he did light him up. He did, yeah.
So he says that, and then at practice yesterday, Daryl Ryder asked him a question, and Dylan Gabriel plays it perfectly. He goes, great question. He has to know that this is the guy who's ripping him. But the thing is...
I tell you what, if Dylan Gabriel's smart, he doesn't know that he's the guy that's ripping him, and all he cares about is football.
You always talk about how players should react to questions. That's exactly how you would have told them to react to that, right?
Yeah, I guess so. You're right. Okay. Mike, you're right.
All right.
I never question.
Dylan Gabriel, they say, is unplayable, right? So did he get hurt?
No. Daryl said that.
But they were saying he couldn't hit open people. Everybody's saying he can't hit open people. He doesn't look like he's playable. So, I mean, did he get hurt at practice and limp off? Or did they all of a sudden say, yo, we got to take a break?
No, he experienced, I think it was on Saturday, he experienced tightness in his hamstring.
Yeah, maybe that's all it is. Maybe that's affecting his throwing motion.
I don't know. I mean, I've never heard, Daryl Ryder come out and just be so negative and rip on a player like that.
Let me direct you to the archived episodes of It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, my friend.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
That was Daryl's opinion. I know others don't share it. So,
they're in a unique position. We knew this right away. We knew this when they decided to take a turn from Deshaun Watson, knowing that the odds of him playing this season are next to zero. And if he does, it'd be later in the year, and we'll see what happens. But I don't throw a guy out there if he's 60%. And I think that's what they're going on, and that's why you bring in another quarterback. I think we joked about this the other day. I'm like, hey, are they going to need to bring in another quarterback when Pickett was hurt? And we were like, oh, well, they got three more. Yeah, you're right. And then all of a sudden.
But then.
Now you're looking at three of the four guys are a little bit banged up.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a great opportunity for Sanders on Friday. That's the one thing I'll say that.
I think that's exactly right.
And
it's going to be his opportunity.
I think when I watch this game, I want to see how complex the offense is, and I want to watch who he's playing against. That's all.
Our buddy Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk. I'll make sure I don't say it. He wrote a story yesterday, Browns ad quarterback Tyler Huntley.
Yeah.
As only Florio could write. This is the start of his column. When you have two quarterbacks, you have none. When you have five quarterbacks, you're the Browns. When you have six quarterbacks, you're... And then he used a word that starts with F.
Oh, he actually wrote that?
Yes. It was F and then hyphen, 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 K-E-D.
Yes.
So when you have two, you have none. When you have five, you're the Browns. When you have six, you're...
I got it. Keep you out of trouble there, Jeff.
Does this situation point you in a direction of the Browns quarterback situation of who is going to start the season? Like,
yes, it's Flacco. Yeah, I am 100% all in. It's Joe Flacco, not only because of the injuries right now, as long as he's healthy, but it's also Joe Flacco because if I'm Kevin Stefanski, I need to win, and I'm going to put the guy out there that knows what it's really like to win.
I will differ with you.
You can differ with me all you want. I think I'm right on this one.
You think you're right on everything. That's
no,
okay.
I don't. I'll admit when I'm wrong or I'm wavering. I just think Pickett being banged up now going into the second week, it's Flacco. It's got to be Flacco. And I would not put Flacco on the field Friday.
I would say it's Flacco except for this. If next week Kenny Pickett is good to go and gets tons of reps against the Eagles in their practices, and then let's see what they do in the game against Philadelphia, it could still be Pickett. If he's out there against Philadelphia, missing, even if Pickett doesn't go this week against Carolina and doesn't play on Friday, doesn't practice tomorrow and doesn't play on Friday, I think he could still get the starting job if against Philadelphia he's able to practice 2 days and then play and looks good. If he's dinged up next week, Andy, it's all over. It'll be Joe.
Depending on health, too, I was sort of looking into this morning because I was thinking about, okay, let's say they go into the season and they still have all four quarterbacks and you guys are like, oh, they're going to have all four quarterbacks on this roster. I just don't think all four are going to be active. But as I started looking at that, I'm wondering if they have to keep all four active when they turn in the initial roster.
And which they did last year, by the way.
By the game, again, I want to preface that when I say that I don't think there's going to be four quarterbacks on this roster, I'm saying that going into Friday of week one. Only because
Andy's trying to back out of buying lunch.
But remember how they kept Flacco on the practice squad? Or not Flacco, who they?
Huntley. It was Tyler Huntley. They were trying to trade him last year, right?
Correct. Was it Tyler Huntley?
Was it Huntley? Remember, they kept putting somebody on the practice squad. We're like, what are they doing? I don't understand that. And then you start reading the rules. Like, I don't know if someone wanted to pick up one of our two rookie quarterbacks off of the... First of all, you can protect four players on your practice squad. And then the other thing is,
They have to clear waivers to get there, though, Andy.
Right.
So you do have to, from everything that I've seen, you do have to expose them at least once to get them on the practice squad.
Well, I don't know. If they expose one of those guys just for 24 hours, you have to ask yourself, if you pick someone up on waivers, can you throw them right on the practice squad?
I don't think you can. I think if you pick somebody up on waivers, you have to put them on the active roster.
I thought that was true, too. So maybe we'll ask Mary Kay about this, too. That if they do that, and then if you pick somebody up off of someone's practice squad, they have to be on the active roster for at least 3 games. So then the next question is, if you feel comfortable with your number one and number two quarterback, why would you bring in another quarterback, especially one that was drafted in the third or the fifth round in this year's draft? I there's a math game here that makes me think the Browns will have one of those quarterbacks on the practice squad. So all four guys might still be around. I just cannot see leaving three guys on the active roster that will not have any chance of suiting up on any given Sunday for this team. That's three roster spots that you're going to give up going into a game. And I know there's active and inactive. I can't see it. It doesn't make any sense.
Mike Florio finished up his story about Tyler Huntley with something that might make you think a little bit. He says Huntley's much more than a camp arm. 25 regular season appearances, 14 regular season starts. Surprising, he was available. Not surprising, the Browns have pounced on yet another quarterback.
You think they're not happy with the guys they got in camp right now?
Well, yeah, I'm not eliminating him from the mix, Andy. You know, he's had some success in the league. What What if he comes in and he's really good and they like him, say, more than Kenny Pickett, even though they could have?
That's fair. I could see that happening. Yeah,
see, that's – so I would just say stay tuned on this.
What if they like him more than Joe Flacco?
I'd be stunned.
I would be too, but
you never know.
You don't.
You never know.
You're right.
Jim Schwartz, Browns defensive coordinator, has a lot on his back this year because that defense needs to get back to where it was. We'll hear little words of wisdom from Schwartz coming up next. Mary Kay Cabot joins us at 11.
Daryl had some interesting news yesterday. Did you see what Daryl posted yesterday out there? Got a lot of people's attention. Broward County, their court records yesterday. Quinshon Judkins, his attorney, filed yesterday to waive Judkins' right to a speedy trial, meaning the case could get pushed into early 2026. The question then became, all right, nobody's thrilled about this situation, clearly. What's this mean, though, for his situation with the Cleveland Browns? People just want to be sports fans here. He's not signed. I got to tell you, and everything that they've said kind of sounds like they're not going to sign him until this thing is taken care of.
I don't know.
But if you're waiving a right to a speedy trial, have you talked to anybody about this? Like, what's going on?
There are some legal people, legal experts, and
are they real ones? Or
yeah, absolutely. Okay. There are a few people that actually practice law that are online spitting out 12 page threads on this, and a few of them said this could mean the opposite, that it's not going to be drawn out, that sometimes when this happens, this means they are closing in on a settlement behind the scenes, some sort of, ending to this.
What's the settlement behind the scenes with the court system?
Yes, with prosecutors and being able to take care of this, they could be closing in on it. So depending on it's just one of those, depending on who you talk to, who you hear from, obviously. It's the way they're operating right now in Florida. We just don't know. Because there's just not a lot of real information coming out of there.
What's part of the frustrating thing, I think, for just a football fan is that this is only the first step. Like, this situation here would only be the first step. Then you got to get what contract are you going to sign? And the third thing is, and it's probably not even that in that order. What contract do you sign? But also, what's the NFL going to do about it? Because until it's settled, or until the situation is resolved, what is the NFL going to do? I don't know if the NFL is just going to let him play while you have an open situation going on.
Yeah.
People do have the right to work. Boy, we went through that a few years ago. But
you can't let him play if you don't sign him.
But you can't let him play if you don't sign him. Exactly.
And then there's the commissioner's exempt list that comes into play if they do sign him. Like, if they sign him tomorrow, they'd get a ton of bad PR, but, Browns are used to that, and Browns have had no problems signing. I mean, Devin Bush is on the team, so, and they've had a slew of other guys that have had issues that they
these
have.
These were all guys that were under contract with the Browns before these situations came to light. There's one guy that's under contract with the Browns that had situations come to light before, and how did that turn out for them PR-wise?
Yeah. But
I don't think they can sign him without this being resolved first.
I tend to agree with Owen just because I got to make sure nothing else is going to happen here. Like, this has to be just resolve it, and then we can talk about signing you. You're not under a contract right now. And it seems that they're in hearing Andrew Berry, hearing the Haslams, hearing Kevin Stefanski, it seems that they are in no hurry to get something down on paper with him. Before this is all taken care of here, because I don't know how you sign a guy to a contract, something binding that you got to give him money and a signing bonus on, when he's got an open case like this where we don't know all the details just yet. I mean, you hear about how they didn't know, and then what the week off they didn't know, but apparently there was some history there between him and her. I mean, it's ugly, but it's also part of what happens. Sadly, it's part of what happens a lot in professional sports with this. So I don't think that they can just put him on the roster, but they wouldn't put him on the roster. You wouldn't just put him on the exempt list. But it's almost like you're signing up for more problems and more distractions. I don't know if it's a distraction in the locker room, but you're signing up for more problems, more distractions within your fan base that you probably don't want until it's done. Like if they go, hey, we've come to an agreement. He has pleaded to this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. His punishment is this, that, and the other. He will take care of that during the winter of 2026 down here in Florida. Until then, he is free to work up in Cleveland, Ohio, this, that, and the other. And then you sign him to a contract. I think that would go over way better than anything else that you could think of. Because then it's just the first step towards, okay, you sign him to a contract, then he's on the exempt list. Then it's in Roger's court, and then what's Roger going to do over the entire thing? So right now, guys, that whole process, I'm thinking, I don't know if we're going to see him on the field this year. I don't think we're going to see him for the Browns.
That's what's so fascinating.
That's how I'm operating.
Is this thing immediately that was kind of the way I was thinking a few days ago, and then when this came out and lawyers started weighing in and saying, "Oh, this actually means it could be heading towards a resolution." This is sometimes a tactic that does mean that talks have escalated behind the scenes to resolve something. Then immediately, if this did get resolved in the next week, my guess is the Browns would sign him. They'd get the bad PR. He would probably face some sort of suspension, and then here we go. So it's amazing that we are looking at two completely different paths here.
Well, listen, he will face some sort of legal penalty. It doesn't mean he can never work ever again. All right, he will face his legal penalty, and he will face an NFL penalty. So he faces both those. I also am thinking about not just that. It's like, all right, he's missed all of camp. I imagine he's going to miss the rest of camp. So he's going to miss the preseason. I'm just going to throw him in there on the football field. Now, at that time, you could say, who knows what the Browns record is going to be. I'm sure a lot of fans are sitting there going, bleep, Ken, why not? It ain't going to work like that. So I as of right now.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to that, though, is we have had everybody kind of tell us it is a running back. Like, the running back is the one position where you could see a player get thrown in. Like, coaches have thrown in running backs that they have just picked up and they've rushed for 100 yards in games. Like,
yeah, but in the type of offense that you run, if you're going to run play action and boot, hell, by the time he plays, Shador Sanders or Dylan Gabriel could be playing for you. So do you want to just have him out there and leave Shador Sanders or Dylan Gabriel naked out there to go get rocked? I don't think anybody else would want to do that.
Are these running backs that have been thrown in, and I you know, there are names that pop in my head, but none of them have ever been guys that have never had an NFL training camp before, right? Like, he's never had an NFL training camp. Like, they signed Kareem, you know, was gone, and then he comes back when Nick Chubb gets the knee injury, right? And they throw him right back into the fire.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that's been in the NFL for a while, right? Like,
yes.
Has been through all of the hurdles of the offseason and the preseason leading
up
to everything.
And knows what your offense is doing. Yes.
You know, Quinshon's never even had, other than some mini camps, right? And some OTAs.
That's it.
That's his only NFL experience.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if this were a quarterback, I would say right now his season's over.
At the same time, yeah.
A running back, I don't think his season's over. And I don't think Browns care about PR.
Run 45 dive. Go do it, Quinshon, right?
I think the Browns have proven over the years they'll draft guys with all sorts of red flags, asterisks, former, you know, police reports in college. They've never really cared about any of that. I mean, they might say they do, and they might bring in, you know, who was it they had come in and talk to?
Yeah.
To their team about domestic violence. The reality is, you know, on the police report, it does say this girlfriend of his has visible bruising to the face.
But
so he's absolutely going to get suspended.
Exactly. And it's not, but that's what I'm saying. How long is the suspension here? Yeah. How long does this go? Is it a standard six, or how does that work?
What was Mike Hall last year?
It ended up being five with the time and everything like that. So again, I look at it and go, how quickly does it get resolved? And then how quickly do you sign him to a contract? Because I'm sure there might be some wrangling there. Maybe he's just desperate and he'll sign anything you put in front of him. And then you have to go through the NFL system. So it might be sooner than later. But as of right now, I'm looking at it going, well, it's a second round pick that just basically does not exist now. I've had first round picks that haven't existed over the last 3 years. I can get used to that. So it's a second round pick that just does not exist. And I think a lot of fans' problems is, it's like, hey, you sign up for the problems, you got to deal with it. Like, the Bengals of the 2000s signed up for a lot of problems. They also went to the playoffs a bunch. They didn't win, but they went to the playoffs a bunch. If you knowingly sign up for the problems, that's one thing. But the whole, hey, babe in the root, the babe in the woods routine, to then going, oh yeah, there was a history there. Beg pardon? So what do you know that you're getting into? I mean, sometimes it's like, hey, you don't know, guys mess up. That's the nature of the business. Your product is people. It's tough. But in this case, what do you know? What don't you know? And then how do you get them out there on the football field? I mean, these are all big things that I think for a lot of fans go, hey, you know what? Season's going to be rough enough as it is. If he gets out there, fine. I don't even know if fans are going to say great over that, considering what's accused here. If he gets on the field, fine. But if he doesn't get on the field, it's not like they're expecting much anyway.